Welcome back to the CTO Playbook, the podcast dedicated to helping CTOs excel. In this episode, I'm speaking to Dr. Peter Wong, an international CTO based in Hong Kong, about what it really takes to scale from startup to enterprise in the high-stakes world of health tech. We explore how he scaled COVID testing from a few hundred to over 50,000 tests a day, how he built a distributed engineering team across continents, and why cultural integration, not just system architecture, is his key to scaling success. If you're a CTO navigating growth, this one's packed with hard-won lessons and some interesting comparisons. I'm your host, Adam Horner. As a coach, I help CTOs from startups through to enterprises to lead with clarity, confidence, and strategic impact. And just before we continue, I want to let you know about something new I've built that's launching shortly. If you've ever felt like there's no instruction manual for being a CTO, you are not alone. I felt that too, and I hear it constantly from the CTOs and technology leaders that I work with. It's one of the reasons I created this podcast and why I release it every week. Because CTO leadership is hard, and I believe you shouldn't have to figure it all out on your own. So now I've brought together everything under one brand, the CTO Playbook. It's the new home for this podcast, our growing community, and a full suite of coaching programs designed to support you through every stage of the technology leadership journey. Think of it like a mountain. The hard climb begins not at the very bottom, but at base camp, laying the foundation, preparing you to lead, and setting the direction of travel. Then comes the elevate phase, where you climb, apply what you've learned, and face more complex high-stakes challenges. And when the terrain gets steep and personal, there's CTO Ascent, my existing one-to-one coaching program that's tailored support for the most demanding parts of your journey. I've recently announced the launch of CTO Basecamp, a new cohort-based coaching program for technology leaders strengthening their leadership foundation. If you're ready to stop figuring it out the hard way and start leading with clarity, confidence, and strategic impact, the waitlist is now open with early access and a discounted rate for those who join early. To learn more about CTO Basecamp, CTO Ascent, and what's coming next with Elevate, please visit thectoplaybook.com. As for scaling stories, what about going from a few hundred per day to over 50,000 per day? Let's hear about what made this possible. Peter, we've been planning this episode for a while. It's great to talk to you finally. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Adam.
So just to get us a little bit into the background of where you come from, you've had this fantastic journey. You've come out of academia, you've moved into the commercial space, and you've got quite a lot of sort of citations and documents that you've been, publications that you've worked on in the past. But could you just sort of give us a bit of a red thread? What's the common theme to give us a bit of an idea of who Peter Wong is by just telling us about your journey through from where you started to where you are now, and what sort of common themes that take us through there?
Okay, so the common theme is more around learning. It's always about learning and looking at the unknown. So even as academia, going through my degrees, going through my PhDs, it's looking about how to address the unknowns. We don't have all the answers. And so it's all about discovery, learning. I myself is someone who actually just wants to learn all the time. And so that's what got me into academia and been doing research work. And of course, getting into software engineering, computer science, really interested in looking at robustness of software. How do we build software simpler, less buggy, more reliable? So those things like that. And how do we make things easier for engineers and users to use? So that kind of is the theme. And I had the opportunity back in 2009 to work in Amsterdam, working at a project where we are bringing research and commercial together. So academic research and commercial together, where not only we're doing deep research, but we are also looking at how to apply that into the industry. So I had that opportunity, and that kind of led me through into more about software engineering as a practice.
And that was your transition, was it, from sort of academia to the commercial industry world?
Exactly. And then throughout my journey in the industry, it's all about learning again. So working in e-commerce, and so the company I was working in Amsterdam doing this research work is an e-commerce company. So where I learned a lot about, you know, low latency system, scaling, memory management, all the way up to into different industries. So when I left that industry, I went into investment banking and payments industry, where data security is really important, where, you know, looking at correctness of transactions is very important. So then software engineering comes into play again, where how do you build things that are scalable, but again, then you will introduce ideas like continuous integrations and deployment, looking into DevOps, looking into automations, infrastructure automations, looking into continuous testing. And then there I had the opportunity to start looking at, well, you know, these are all the technology, but you actually need the teams to be there to get the technology
running. The people side of it.
Exactly. And that's when things that start getting interesting and more interesting, because the dynamics is different. It's not a one way you're looking at technology, but also getting everyone involved, being looking at how everyone plays a part in the team, how everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, and then how we can really focus on the strengths and at the same time trying to improve the weaknesses, so to speak. So that's where the team...
So constant learning theme all the way through there then.
Exactly, exactly. And into different industry, right? Looking into different types of systems. So then I have the opportunity after working in payments, that was a TravelX, investment banking, I was at UBS. And then after that, and they both were in London. And then after that, I got the opportunity to work at a startup. So again, because at TravelX, I was fortunate enough to work in a project where we do digital transformation, where I have the taste of going from zero to one.
So it's almost like a startup within a large enterprise, because TravelX is pretty huge by this stage, isn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. It's huge. And that's the, I guess that's the less risky side. We're not going all in the startup, but at the same time, we get to do all the fun things that startups do. So doing this digital transformation, we get to look at how to build team from zero to one. I get to see it firsthand. I get to be involved in it firsthand. And so that kind of got me into that mindset of, well, I like to build things. I like to build teams. I like to build systems from zero to one and digital transformation. And so then I got the opportunity to join this startup called Prenetics in Hong Kong as a CTO. When I joined, arrived in 2017, there were around 50 of us. Hong Kong based.
Right. Was that your first role as a CTO there?
Yes, first role as a CTO. Before that, I was a head of engineering at TravelX. And so transitioned that into Prenetics as CTO is quite different. Not only we have the software part, we also don't have a lot of systems in place, processes in place, and people were, you know, they're dotted around different parts of the world. We had team members from back then from Taiwan, Hong Kong. We even had people from Iran. We had a team in Iran as well. It was quite interesting, people dotted around. So
was that your first experience with a distributed team as well then?
No. So at TravelX, I had the opportunity to have team members in India, Bulgaria, and also the UK. So back then, right. I had the opportunity already to deal with different culture, different ways of working, different understandings of team dynamics. There's no right solution, but you kind of think of how, you could sort of have one team in one location and one team in another location, or you can say, actually, you can have people from two different locations working together as a team, right? If the time zone permits, for example. So Bulgaria wasn't that, it's only a few hours different from the UK, so it actually did work. So we did have a team where they were working together. And that's what we wanted. Yeah. We wanted to integrate everyone together, so there's no difference between locations.
Yeah, it gets harder when there's not so much of a time zone overlap, though. So, I mean, that must be an interesting challenge when you're working from Hong Kong with people spread even further geographically then, at least time zone-wise.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So at Prenetics, especially when we were scaling, so by 2020, so the world hit COVID and the company pivoted quite spectacularly from DNA testing to COVID testing. We took 10 days to do that pivot.
10 days?
Yeah, 10 days to do that pivot. At the beginning, we launched this project called Project Screen in, I think it was April 20th, 2020. And by beginning of May, we had the opportunity to work with the English Premier League to restart the season. So we said...
Oh, of course, because everybody was still in lockdown and they needed to start getting players playing, right?
Exactly. So not only we have a system, back then it was based in Singapore, but it was on the cloud, on AWS, but we had to say, actually, they needed all their data sitting in EU. And so we had 4 days to lift and ship the whole system across. And we didn't have a lot of team members back then. It was still a rather small team. And so the interesting part around that was there was a lot of getting your hands dirty, working together, working through the nights, working through the weekends. There was literally no downtime during that time. So we scaled. So then we started to scale because we had all these different kind of people started to know us that we can deliver these tests and systems to help the organizations. So we started working with airports in the UK, Hong Kong. We started working with governments. doing mass testings, and then we had to scale. So the team, our team...
Give us a bit of a number, an idea of the sort of scale that you were actually scaling up to, because there is scaling and then there is hyperscaling. I think you were firmly in that sort of second category, but just give us a bit of an idea of the numbers there, Peter. Yeah.
So at the beginning, when we start doing COVID, we were around 10 of us engineers, not many. It was still quite a small startup. We were running maybe a few hundred tests. We're doing a few, processing a few hundred tests a day. At the peak of COVID, that was 1.5 years down the line, we were doing 50,000 tests daily across the systems.
50,000 tests daily, from a few hundred. So that's sort of adding several zeros on the end of the sort of scale that you're going on then.
Yeah, at the same time, we had to scale the team from sevenfold. So we basically, we had 70 people in the team across India, UK, Hong Kong. So it was a very dynamic, it was very quick also. And so the challenge is obviously when you scale with a lot of people very quickly, there's a lot of ambiguity. It's very difficult to get everyone with the right, with the same information. Even if you present...
So communication and information parity is one of those key challenges to overcome. And we often sort of don't realize just how much teams rely on instant communication until we end up literally doubling or tripling the size of our team in a short space of time. So, I mean, because I've seen that in the past with teams that I've helped scale as well, where you end up with this sort of idea that you sort of assume that people understand things because you said it once or twice. And then you realize that actually they interpreted something quite different, either from different assumptions, different backgrounds, just different starting points. So, I mean, that must be one of the interesting challenges to overcome there as well.
Yeah, definitely. So you think you have actually communicated the point across, you even have written it down, shared the notes. And yet, even if everyone heard what you said, they might have interpreted differently.
Yeah.
And so ambiguity stays, basically. And so you have to work through that.
So what were some of the approaches you took to try and help smooth out the ambiguity? Because often there ends up being unintended or unexpected friction in those areas where people are saying, he said this, and others are saying, no, he said that. And actually, you said both of those things, which just interpreted in different ways, and then sometimes leads to execution on different paths. I mean, there's several approaches. One is to silo things altogether. Another one is to add constant sort of expectation leveling steps into the processes, checkpoints and guardrails and so on. What was your approach there to help make sure that people stayed on track in a time of, well, global chaos at that point, right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Not only we had this big team, we scaled to this big team and systems, but we also had to scale our support, our operations from the perspective of application support, because we were delivering features so fast that there was a lot of parts where we were just delivering MVPs because we didn't have time to build the full-fledged. And so there needs to be support, especially, you can imagine that if I pick the English Premier League example, we scaled out our system to provide testing for them so they can get back into training. But then once they got back into training, they gave us 10 days to deliver the digital health passport so they get back into the stadium and compete.
Oh, okay. Right. So there's another level of requirement altogether.
Yeah. And so it wasn't even just delivering the system, but then all of their matches could be during the afternoon UK hours or in the evening UK hours. Now, the majority of our team is based in Asia, Hong Kong hours or India hours. And so the challenge is then we have to support basically across time zone. And we weren't just doing the UK testing, we were also doing testing in Hong Kong. So we were testing for both. We were working across both time zones. And so
hence almost no downtime then.
Exactly. So we very quickly, we had to work on a 24-hour rota. And then again, then the challenge comes in the communications.
Did you take a sort of a follow the sun model then, where you sort of had people in all regions around the world following around?
Yes, we have to. And then that's why we also very quickly had to scale up a team in the UK to work in the UK hours so that we can keep on delivering changes quickly for the testing.
And I can imagine that your background and experience of having been in the UK probably helped to that quite significantly. But one of the other challenges I've found with teams across multiple time zones is you sort of end up with a version of the whisper game where, you know, one time zone hands off to the next, you know, across the next time zone, and they hand off to the next one around the world. Then they hand off to the next one around the world. By the time it comes back, even just within 24 hours, people can go, how did you get to there from where we were yesterday? That's crazy. I mean, that's one of those common challenges. I mean, how on earth do you manage to help with that approach to the handoffs, the pickups, the communication, and making sure that there was a sort of a standard version of the truth?
So UK is around 7-8 hours different from Hong Kong. And so, fortunately, there are still some overlap. There are a few hours overlap in the afternoon towards the evening. And so there was still some communications between the teams in Hong Kong, India, and in the UK. Keeping an open door policy helps a lot. And that means working directly with the team together, sitting together, basically working together. There's no differences between, oh, you're based in the UK or you're based in Hong Kong, or you're based in India. It doesn't really matter. When we did have the meetings together, we still have our regular, let's say we have a daily stand-ups, we still have a daily stand-ups and we have it together. And the other interesting thing is, so because we were distributed, everyone were, I guess some people have office. So in Hong Kong, for example, we still have offices. People still, so right. At Prenetics, we didn't actually work remote. I never actually worked from home during COVID. I was in the office for 3 years, basically. But in the UK, for example, everyone was working remote. Our UK office didn't have a physical office for engineering. So everyone was remote. But in order to...
And that's because just because of cultural differences in terms of shared space and working spaces or individual places to work in that you had in Hong Kong then?
Well, for one thing, Hong Kong is just a city. So it's very easy to get to an office. Whereas in the UK, when we're hiring quickly, we have to hire people across the country. And so there's no way everyone can get to the same office. So it's much easier if they're working remotely. But then it means that when we do have meetings, we have everyone joining a call together. We don't have, it's not a situation where, oh, Hong Kong is sitting in a meeting room, but then UK joining remote. It's everyone remote. So basically everyone has the same access of information.
That's interesting. So you avoided the hybrid approach altogether then.
Yes, exactly. So even if you're having the same office, everyone get on a call on a computer separately. We would be talking through the screen. It's not, because it's very easy if you're co-located, if you're sitting with your colleagues, and then let's say you're remote and then I started talking with my colleague, you feel like you're just listening as a third party far away from the meeting. And that's usually not very conducive to getting alignment, getting information together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a key part of that, one of those sort of leadership decisions that you need to take around that are in the interest of the team rather than in the interest of a few people locally or a few people in ways of working. I mean, that's a fascinating history. And in terms of scaling, clearly you've got several experiences of significant scaling from beginning to end. Just sort of thinking about those processes and that cross-functional culture, which you've mentioned several times about putting people different regions, but also different parts of the business as well. What are some of the sort of the key challenges that you overcome in there that we haven't already mentioned?
Some of the challenges would be ways of working. So there are different, culturally, people do things differently. And so even if you have a set of processes, the understanding could be quite different. And so it's having the constant communication to understand and to have people explain how things work.
So can you give us an example to bring that to life?
So let's say how you document certain things and how you write certain, how you communicate even on a chat room. And even just as a regular daily stand-up, for example, a daily stand-up actually is a good example where I can still see the really difference. Like in Hong Kong and in India, daily stand-up are more of a status update. It still is more of a status update. Whereas in the UK, there is still that element of status update, but there's a lot more social element to it, I found. And that's a cultural difference, one thing. And so and understanding that part actually makes, trying to blend that in and trying to make it understand. So during stand-up meetings in Hong Kong could be quite serious, especially...
Quite formal.
Yeah, quite formal, especially if I'm in the room, people can take it quite seriously, quite formal.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, when I'm in the UK, then when I'm working with the UK team, it's a lot more relaxed. And I still remember about when I first learned about daily stand-ups, it's about unblocking things. It's about actually looking ahead, looking at what we need to be doing. But a majority of people wants to talk about what they've done already.
So there's a big difference there between what people are expecting to do, the social connection, and then the bit that you want your agenda for those meetings to be. And so aligning all of that, is it just as simple as communication and setting expectations, making sure everybody else understands where everybody else is coming from? Or is there more to it than that, do you think, Peter?
I don't think there's going to be a way where we're going to solve the problem of cultural differences. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Or maybe fortunately, because that's what makes it fun, right? I guess if everyone's culturally the same, then it's not as then you don't, you're missing the fun, the learning and the fun you don't have. So I find it that it is good to have that differences, but at the same time, how to bring them in together, how to bring it together. It's through talking. It's through understanding. It's through, you know, so let's say, for example, Hong Kong has different holidays and celebrations, holidays. India has different holidays. The UK has different holidays. And so again, that's another piece where, well, it's not only, oh, there's a holiday in the UK, but actually trying to find out what that is and why is there a holiday. And same thing in India, same thing in Hong Kong. So that's again, is an example of, right, trying to bring that culture in, because in the end of the day,
so integration more than normalization then.
Exactly, integration. So it's about understanding how things, how people do things, you know. So for example, like Hong Kong doesn't have a concept of bank holiday, for example, but UK yeah. has. And so trying to get that concept across and have people to understand. But you also have similar things where you have certain holidays in Hong Kong where it doesn't exist in the UK.
Yeah. And so in terms of that sort of constant change and constant integration then, I mean, I think that's one of those key things, as you mentioned there, going through these different stages of internationalization, of going through some of these challenges of scaling and learning, there's effectively a constant change. So what's been your approach to help teams adapt to the many changes we get? Because one of my experiences of scaling fast, on the outside, it looks like this sort of smooth line that goes up and to the right all the time. But from the inside, it's like fighting bottleneck after bottleneck. And as soon as you've released one bottleneck, everything rushes forward and slams into the next bottleneck that you then got to go and figure out. So in terms of that sort of constant evolution and adaptation, as well as the cultural aspect to it, what's been your approach to help the teams through the systematic approach of breaking down those bottlenecks?
So it's by looking at two really important things. First is keeping things simple. The things that we can control, keeping it simple. For example, choosing a technology that the team knows, and we know that we can find a lot of information about, so that the team can actually focus on the business domain rather than spending time on the new technology, so to speak, the unknown technology. I think that's quite important.
Right.
And secondly, even when that happens, you will always hit a bottleneck, or you will make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes, especially when you're making changes all the time. And so again, it's getting individuals to come up to it as soon as possible, to share that mistakes, to work together when mistakes happen, and not to form up that blame culture. It's very easy to actually say when everyone's very busy, it's very, very, very tired, and then someone makes a mistake, it's very easy to think on from that kind of direction. But as someone who leads a team, you have to very quickly bring that around and actually looking at it from a holistic perspective, say, well, actually, how do we get out of this? How do we not do it next time? Right. So it's also, there's a lot of learning around that as well. And I think that trickles throughout, regardless which, what your background is, right? Regardless of the country you're from, the culture you're from, having that transparency and having that learning and admitting to the mistakes. So when I make a mistake, I will admit that to the team in the same way that, so that if I can demonstrate that, hopefully that the team can see it, that, well, it's an open door. Obviously, there are things that we need to look at. We need to measure individually, including myself, whether I'm doing a good job or not, right? But at the same time, you know, making mistakes, but then learning from it. I think that's actually more important, because there will be more mistakes being made, but then hopefully those are new ones and your learning will help you to solve those things quicker, right? So that's kind of how I've been approaching bringing different peoples together in the mix of changes.
And I like that a lot. I think that approach of avoiding individual blame is a really powerful one. The phrase that I often use with people I coach is that it's about blaming the process rather than the individual. You can always fix a process. You can always change a way of working. You don't really want to go fixing people, so we shouldn't be blaming people. And if there's a problem, you want to try and bake it into the institutional knowledge, and that's the way that processes and people integrate and work together rather than how individuals are.
Yeah.
And so in order to make that sort of safety for failure, you mentioned there about teams being able to make decisions and teams being able to fail. So there must be a fairly strong amount of delegation in there as well to enable that. What's your approach to sort of, you know, enabling teams to make decisions?
Well, I think it's based on the organization and the architecture. I think they come hand in hand. The architecture of the system that you design together with the team should be one where everyone has a clear understanding of the architecture, so that they can own the individual's business domains or the business components within the systems, and they can then move as an individual team. So that's one thing. So breaking the system down into smaller pieces is very important. But then at the same time, using the same similar technology so that teams can learn from each other as well. So you're not just running 20,000 miles in a second ahead, but actually you're trying to get everyone with you at the same time, because some teams going to run faster than others also. It's just the way that they're working on different parts of the systems. They're dealing with different issues during the day and during the night. And so it's bringing that back together, back to the team, so that sharing. So sharing is quite important, having a regular sharing where not just, you know, the same people talking also, but also allowing other team members to bring in their ideas, allowing them to ask questions as well. Because I think that's also a cultural thing where it is actually quite common that people do not ask questions. I find that quite common because people are afraid that they might be saying the wrong thing if they ask questions. And so again, it's creating...
Is that something you find is more or less common in certain areas?
I find that if you do not have a relaxed environment, then people tend to keep themselves quiet. So when I talked about like having a daily stand-up, say in Hong Kong, and initially it tends to be a very formal thing, a very serious thing, then people don't tend to say it a lot. When you say there's any questions, there's no questions. There's never questions, but there's obviously questions, right? So it's about how to, I guess, break that wall and make it so that, and actually that applies across as well, is having one-on-ones. I think that's also quite important.
Yeah.
Even if it's a big team, trying to have one-on-ones with everyone as much as possible. It doesn't have to be long, but you've got to be able to speak to everyone. And so that everyone knows that you can have a conversation with them and you can understand from their perspective as well. I think that's also
quite important. Yeah, one-on-ones are one of those big sort of leadership hacks that make an incredible difference, isn't it?
Yes. Because people don't tend to talk in a group. Like they're not going to voice out when there's a whole group of people sitting in front of them
unless they're being coached to.
Exactly. Or if they're comfortable with the group, right? If it's a friendly group, for example.
So your approach is to establish that comfort and routine of talking out in the one-to-ones and then begin to slowly apply that to the group then? Is that the way you do it?
Yes. So it's both from a team perspective. So individual teams always have, and then also, so the meetings is more at the team level, but as well as on the function levels. So then you get people across the team sitting together as well, sharing. I remember doing this also even more quite interesting during COVID, we were still one organization doing COVID testing. So we're working on one system, one big system, post-COVID, we got listed NASDAQ in 2022, May. And then after that, COVID kind of stopped by end of 2022, and we had to diversify. So in terms of what we focus on, so the company made a number of acquisitions since 2022. And my job then as a CTO is not only just to build a system that we have, but also go into all of these companies that we acquired and work with the teams there and look at how we can do, if there's transformation needs to be done, how do we actually do that? And how do we make things more, I guess, understand where the bottlenecks are and trying to improve where we can.
So it comes back to bottlenecks.
Yes. There's always bottlenecks. Every organization has bottlenecks. But it's about then you get to work with different culture, really different culture. And not only that, but also different, they're actually working on different businesses.
Yeah.
Right. So you're getting the engineering team in different companies talking together. And that's actually quite different and interesting ways of doing things. While I have the opportunity to go around different teams and working with them, not many people have the opportunity. So that's why I wanted to share, each team to share what they've been doing on, the technical things, so that they understand the journey they're on, so they can share that. I think that's quite interesting, quite useful because then...
And what was the goal there? What was the goal there? Because clearly when you go around, you have the mandate to make sure that you can integrate these different companies into a group that is now a new group. But what's the impetus of getting those teams to share and collaborate between each other? What's the goal?
Learning, to get team members to learn, to get team members to try that different... Because if the company is growing, I want the team members to be there as well, to be growing together as well. And one way to do that, if we're having a lot of different small companies, is that people in the team being able to even if it means that just to know what they're doing, and that's the minimum. And if they can actually really help, if there's any integration that can be done, then that would be even better. Because I think in most cases, it's possible. Some cases, because of regulation, things like that, it might actually be difficult to have engineers from different regions working directly with systems from different countries. So, but then again, the technology, how things work, ways of working, that can be shared.
Yeah. So at the very least, then it's sharing knowledge.
Yeah.
Part of it is also sharing understanding. And in a bonus area, it's sort of discovery of where additional help can be given on either side, I presume.
Exactly. Definitely. Because we are learning from each other.
M&A is one of those areas where it's deep, and I'm sure we could talk about it for a long time. But there was one other area that you and I were talking about just before, which would be fun to come back to, which is the sort of the 0 to 1 stage. Because you mentioned it a few times when we're going through your introduction, and that stage is sort of starting out and going from literally from the starting blocks of just having a very small team, all homogenous, all working on the same problem, to then scaling from there up to having multiple people, getting to the point where you need to recruit and having those challenges, and then getting to those challenges there. So in terms of that 0 to 1 phase, is there anything that's particularly interesting or different about that part of the growth journey from your perspective and your experience?
So one thing is that the team members have evolved together with myself. If you have a team of 5 people, 5 team members, it's very different to have a team of 70, because what they will be doing and focusing on is very different. And so knowing what kind of skill sets and experience you need, and knowing the fact that you're not going to be able to sit next to them all the time and working together all the time, especially when they're across regions. And the challenge is also is when they start working on different parts of businesses, but they might share the same code base, then you get that ambiguity where you have things like conflict on releases and things like that. And then you have to work through with the team together because they all have different priorities. And again, that's actually one word that quite important is prioritizing as well. Because when you start scaling, there'll be a lot of problems that we're trying to solve, including technical debts we're trying to solve as well, and trying to prioritize those different things so that we can actually move forward together. So bringing something from 0 to 1 is actually about starting something really simple.
Unfortunately, during the recording process, we managed to lose 5 or 6 minutes of Peter's recording. So unfortunately, you're just going to have my summary and wrap up of the playbook to finish off this episode, because unfortunately, after a year of recording and having had this happen so far, Murphy's Law has finally struck and we've managed to lose some of the recording. Apologies to you, my viewers. Apologies to Peter. Unfortunately, there was nothing we could do to recover the recordings that we had. So let's just recap then and go back through the things that you told us about, and hopefully we can distill it down into a playbook that is going to summarize all of what we've just spoken about. So I think the first thing is we spoke about that sort of 0 to 1 starting phase where you impressed on us the importance of relying on systems and processes, of prioritizing carefully, and hiring people who pick things up quickly with making good documentation, clean code. You mentioned about, so that was number one. Number two, about having a cross-functional culture. So integrating people across different regions, different ways of working, different expectations, different meeting formats as well. I thought it was a very interesting one to point out too. Number three, the fact that this is constant evolution and having a team, a culture, an approach that adapts to the constant evolution. Number four, it's about learning together. So empowering teams to make decisions and to fail without blame, enabling and empowering people to ask questions is a really key point there. One that I don't think gets mentioned often enough. And then number five, it came across loud and clear across everything. Keep things simple. Anything you can control, keep it simple. Focus on the business domain, especially. For listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And until next time, keep building and leading with impact. Thank you very much for listening all the way through to the end. Just before you go, I'd like to ask you for one thing in return for putting together all these episodes of the CTO Playbook podcast for you. Please leave a review. Wherever you're listening, whether that is Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're on, leaving a quick review will help more CTOs find the podcast and enable me to create more great episodes. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of the CTO Playbook.